What we're talking about today, as you know, is reaching your productivity peak. And I'm going to be talking about some strategies, not only using technology, but also planning, tracking, organizing. And I'm sure with all the experience in this room that there are people that have other strategies as well. So this is my take on thinking about, over the years, how to increase my productivity, organize myself, not lose things in between the cracks. And that's what I'm sharing with you. I teach doctoral students, and so I'm constantly working with them, helping them develop their writing process and develop strategies that will be more efficient. And I'm amazed at what people don't think of. So I'm sharing a lot of those things. I can see we have a lot of doc students in the room too, or new professors. And I have time at the end. Definitely, I would like you to share your strategies as well, technical, organizing, etc. So I see this as not only me sharing what I've come to realize and what I'm doing, but also it'll trigger some ideas from you that you can share with us. Even if we don't have enough time, if you email them to me, those people that give me cards, I'll make a list and send them back out to everybody so we can have a great little resource, okay? I think this is a great conversation and obviously one that people are interested in that we don't talk about too much. You know, who thinks about this except when we're frustrated, right? So that's the major focus of the session. I myself am a professor of education, but I have a very broad background. I started out in the sciences, and currently I am moving to University of Central Florida near Orlando. Just moved there in April and just finished last week at University South Florida, which is in Tampa. And before that was 13 years up in New York City at Fordham University. Before that, Philadelphia at a technology college where I was teaching engineering, computer troubleshooting, et cetera. So a very different sort of background. Been very involved in writing somehow, stumbled into that with my dissertation and publishing, and have somehow found myself at the point that I've published over 30 books. I'm editor of 3 series for Information Age. I've been fortunate to be able to mentor a lot of people through their publishing process so that we get a variety of voices in the literature and different people experiences expressed as academics. And I think that's a very important part. So I've worked with a lot of people, and these are some of the things that people have said have been very helpful to them as well at different stages. As authors, many times we don't think about our careers. Even as academics and researchers, we don't think about our careers. We think about our discipline. That's the way we're trained in the academy, to think about our discipline. I'm an educator. I'm a chemist. I'm a biologist. That is my area. And we don't necessarily think about our careers as journeys. But that's been a very exciting thing for me, and I think it's a very 21st century phenomenon that if we're going to stay vital in the 21st century, we have to be able to adapt to the changing environment. If you're here in this room and you're active in the field, you know that, okay? You've been having to do that. And that is part of looking back and looking forward and saying, where have I been? How can I use my prior experience? Where do I want to go? How can I leverage that to take me to the places and have the experiences I would desire to have? And part of that, I think, is also saying part of this can be an exploration. It's a journey. It's a you're traveling. But you can also be exploring. Not that it's necessarily virgin territory. No person has been there before. But for us, it may be new territory. And the way that we approach content, we approach experiences, is different than any other person. We bring unique experiences just by who we are, the path that we have traveled thus far, the experiences we bring, our family background, our academic background, et cetera, et cetera. We're unique individuals. So if I approach writing a book on biology and you approach writing a book on biology, it's going to be very different. If I approach teaching a class, if I approach researching a topic, using who we are in our person side, not just the cognitive side and the content side, that embodies much deeper, richer approach and makes for much richer variety. And that's part of the exploration, and I think it can give us much greater depth when we think in that respect. And it's been a very exciting journey for me and continues to be as I move from area to area and explore new things, enjoy those, and see how they fit together. And you'll see that I occasionally use this word morph, okay, like metamorphize. Morph. You've seen the graphic programs that you can morph images into strange things. This is morph in a positive way, that you look back and you realize, wow, I'm in a different place. I'm doing different things. And as I say at the bottom, many of these changes have emerged out of not just my academic training, which is very broad, but also my personal interests. Life changes I've gone through, life stages and developments that I've experienced, and they bring new vision to the work that I'm doing as an academic and the work that I do as an author. And I think that's an important piece that people outside of our world that are not academic authors don't realize that. I don't know how much we discuss it. So for me, it's been not a very linear road. My career pathway, and I don't know how many of you identify with this. How many of you have had similar sort of experiences? You've taken a lot of twists and turns, different variety. Yeah, it's becoming more of the norm in 21st century, and it's really what we're going to have to be preparing our students for, flexibility in their career paths, because we know that students that are entering college now are going to be applying for jobs that haven't even been invented when they graduated, right? So it's a very different world. Some of the benefits of looking at our careers, our work from a journey perspective, I've already mentioned. But another one of them is that we can maximize the fact that we can have multiple strands of experience, research, writing, and interests. A very common approach in academia, a traditional approach, is that you're a specialist in only one very narrow area, and you're a deep specialist in that area. That is absolutely fine, okay? But there are others of us that have several strands that we're experts in. And I have found this to be very advantageous, and the reason I bring it up is that in some circles, people speak down about it. But I think it's something to bring up in the 21st century that this can be a very, very positive pattern to consider for a career and for your interests. Having multiple strands of research, multiple strands of interests that I continue to pursue over my academic career has been very helpful because at different times, different publishing opportunities were available. Different grant opportunities were available. Sometimes everything was dried up in one area, but things would be available in another. Okay, that's just the way it is with grants and with the way funding goes, especially in the education world. So having the multiple interests, different collaborations that are available, coming to a conference, and I have something in mind that I want to be able to work on. As I meet different people, new people, I find they're interested in this or that. Well, it works out that a topic that I had on the back burner for maybe a few months from now or a year from now, they're ripe on and they're ready for. Well, I can move that up because a principle that I'm going to share with you, very simple, I'm master of my universe. Okay? So with all this planning that I'm doing about my career is flexibility. And I remain master of my universe. And so with my planning at any time, I desire to change the deadlines that I have created for myself. I desire to change the priority. I can do that because I am master of my universe. Okay? But at the same time, I continue to have a plan, and I continue to be able to see in the big picture where things are, how they fit together, and try to refrain from being overwhelmed and get lost in all of it, okay? But the multiple strands have been very advantageous to me. What's happened over time, because now I'm at 20 years, I must have started when I was 5, I know, but I'm at 20 years of being in academia, but research and development has become a major theme of what I do, now that I'm only working with doctoral students. And research and development ties together everything. I'm constantly designing research, I'm teaching research, I'm doing research design. And I'm realizing the power and strength, the importance of research and design. And that's bringing, that leverages my experience in all these different areas. I'm able to reach back on all these different examples I've done in the past and I'm doing now. But another thing that has happened is that as I look back over these experiences, there's a greater realization of the writing process. As I've worked with students, especially in the last 15 years, I've realized they really struggle with this writing process, just like I did. I wasn't the only one. Who knew, right? And as I've worked with authors that are moving through the ranks, everybody struggles with the writing process. And part of it takes reflection, realizing what is your writing process. Believe it or not, we have one, right? Might not be the greatest, but we have one. We have one. And what do we need to improve? What are our strengths? What are our preferences? How do we leverage those? Are we better at writing in the morning or in the evening? That's when you schedule your time, right? Absolutely. Okay? But are thinking about that and looking at it overall and looking at the patterns to pull those out and think about the writing process and coming to conferences like this to continue to improve those skills and continue to reflect and say, how do I improve my particular skills and what do I bring to the table as a unique author? What do my skills, my background, my expertise bring that's different than the person next to me? Because we all are very different. Okay? So one of the things that Kathy King is known for, if you get to know me and around me very much, is lists. Lists, schedules, tracking, charts, all the time. Okay? And I drive people a little bit crazy because I'm surrounded by lists. I don't make you use the lists, right? But I always have my lists around me because it calms my brain down. Okay, some people get this. Okay, thank you. That's very validating. Thank you. All right, it calms down my brain. If I put it on paper, it's like a brain dump, right? You get it out on the paper, and you know you can find it again. It's not going to run away. It's not going to take off on me, and I can't ever retrieve it. Okay. So we've got it someplace. But the trick is having a consistent place to keep it, okay? And that's where your tech tools come in, and we'll talk about that. But this is a very helpful one. I'm going to show you a variety of different tracking devices I've created. Most of them I use Excel because you've got the lines built in. You can put in a block, and when you want to move it, copy, paste, move it all around, okay? They're easy to print with all the little lines in it. You can expand it, you can shrink it, you can get all different sizes of it. Doing it in Word is a pain in the butt, okay? Yeah, so use Excel to do this, much easier. You don't necessarily need a fancy project program, although if you know how to use one of those, great. If you don't, it might take you a couple of days to learn how to do it that you could have been doing something else, all right? So, but what I'm doing here is I'm looking at a project, and I'm breaking it down into smaller stages. Another famous phrase, look at the big project, it's scary, but let's break it down into phase one, phase two, phase three, right? A book doesn't get written all at once, does it? An article doesn't get all written at once. We write an abstract draft. We write down our concept. We do an outline, and we gradually write the different sections of it. You put it together. You've got the beginnings of your article, and then you edit, and you edit, and you rewrite, and you edit, and edit, and edit, and edit, right? So it's a process, but you can break that down into stages. So looking at the research process, I'm thinking about you're designing your research originally. Then I've got to, once I've got a design, I've got it laid out in a preliminary proposal, enough detail, I have to submit it to the proverbial IRB to get approval to work with human subjects. And then I finally am approved to do my data gathering, my analysis, et cetera, et cetera. But what is the point of me breaking it down into the months on the chart? Once I have these categories, right, I can use the same categories, the same phases for every project I'm doing virtually and adapt it a little bit for unique characteristics, unique phases I need, right? I can just copy and paste it for each one. But over here is which month I'm going to do each part. I don't do one research project at a time or one writing project at a time. I don't have that luxury. I'm usually running two or three research projects and two and three writing projects at any given time, plus teaching my classes, right? Like most of you. So how do you keep track of that and make sure things keep moving and they don't keep colliding? If you use a chart like this, you can actually map it out. So you can say, if I do my data gathering over here while I'm doing analysis on this one, that works out. I can't do data gathering for three projects at the same time. You can't do that. But I can be designing, data gathering, and writing for three different projects. So laying it out visually really helps me a great deal. And I can see when all the lines, so I have a chart like this, and it has several projects, and I can see when the lines start overlapping all in the same month, I have a problem, right? Things have to move down. And so I could talk to my collaborators, or as master of my universe, I just move things around, right? Okay, you're getting it, all right. The tracking can be very, very helpful. These also come into play when you submit grants. How many have done grant writing? Right? You need these, right? They want to see your milestones. These work fabulously for that. It also helps in collaboration with your colleagues to have things documented and so that you can sit down together over Skype, over the phone, or in person and say, does it work for you if we do it this month and that things fall along this way? I've done a lot of work internationally, and being able to document things and track them like this is really helpful for collaboration and coming to agreement before you start. And together, you can change the timelines, but at least you have a starting point and you know what's involved. There's full disclosure ahead of time, right? See, you're master of the universe. There's flexibility in that. And the point of the schedules and tracking is that they help you. They give you freedom, they give you control, but they're never meant to choke you. If you're feeling anxious because of the tracking, rearrange your mindset. You're in control of them. They're there to aid you, okay? Certain personalities can get anxious with tracking things and having lists, okay? Turn it around and let it give you freedom, okay? All right. So another strategy I have, how many of you do this? How many of you make appointments in your calendar with yourself for your writing? Okay, yeah. Did you do it in school for your studying? Did you actually block out times to study when you're in school? You should have. Yeah, that's when you should have started the practice, yes. Excuse the finger, yeah. But that's where the practice should begin. So that's how we can help our students, right? Block out time for studying in your schedule, right? And then so we carry on the practice of blocking out time for writing. Why is that important? What's that? It won't happen. What will happen instead? Life, right. Yeah. Clean the house, right? Take appointments, answer the phone, et cetera, right? Now, an important part of that is location and schedule. What is your best writing time? Okay? Actually, part of my best writing time is late at night. But my spouse, that doesn't work for. Okay? When I'm single, that works. right? But with my spouse, that no longer works. So I'm married now. Had to change that. My best writing time now is morning. So we're going with that. Even though I'm not a morning person, I've readjusted for the sake of love, right? Master of my universe, for the sake of love, I'm readjusting, okay? But location is a really important one. I have a strategy. I wonder how many of you do this. I don't go to the office in the morning. I teach at night. My classes are at night because I teach grad students. So in the morning, I purposely stay home and work in my home office. Because if I'm not in the office, people aren't calling me, people aren't emailing me with urgent messages, and people aren't opening my door. They don't come to my house and open my office door. Okay? But if I'm sitting in the office at 9 a.m., everybody's coming in the office with non-urgent issues. But I'm available. And I'm not the type of person that can close the door and pull down the shade if I'm there. Unless it's an awful deadline and I have to be there, et cetera, et cetera. I feel that I'm available to my students. Now, if my university had a requirement, I had to be on campus 40 hours a week, it would be different. I'd have to find a way to deal with that, but it doesn't. I've never been in a university yet that does that. So I've worked my schedule that I work at home in the morning. Usually I'm in shorts and a t-shirt, and I'm at the computer, and I turn off my email. I check my email first thing, turn it off. The browser is shut for the email. Outlook is shut. Notifications and text messages are off on my phone. Everything's off so that I can write. That is my writing and my research time. And depending on the projects, I have different slots for different things in my schedule. At 12 o'clock, I start to get ready to go to school, and I'm at school by 1:30. My office hours start at 2 o'clock. I have office hours 2 to 5, and class starts at 5:15. Okay. So that's the type of schedule that I've worked out, because then I get writing in every single day, writing and research every day. Now, some days I don't even go to the university. I don't have classes. I don't have meetings, right? And so then I block out, and I can get more work done in those times, grading, class prep, etc. But I try to keep the mornings just for the research and writing and try to use the other blocks during the day when I'm not in office hours or I'm not in meetings for class prep, etc. Another thing to mention, how many are new professors? Newer professors, okay? You've got to put control on your class prep. I have found this in coaching faculty. Class prep, won't it? Will expand to all available time. Look at all the heads nodding among the veterans. It will control your entire week, your entire month to prepare one class. You cannot let it. You have too many other demands on you as a professor. You have to control the amount of time you invest in class prep. Give it a certain amount of time in your schedule, and that's the amount of time it gets, right? Am I right, professors? Okay. That's a very important principle about your time management. This last one, I'm a real big advocate. You need to periodically take 10-minute breaks. You need to get movement. If you want to read a story, I've published recently a couple of articles about physical problems that I've gone through. I am the bionic professor. I have two artificial knees. I have a medical pump hooked into my spine. I have artificial discs and a plate in my neck. And I have 6 herniated discs in my back. I've never had a car accident or anything. It's a hereditary condition, but it was accentuated by too much time at the computer. And I actually, after doing my first 3 books, ended up paralyzed down one whole side of my body as my neck disc collapsed and splintered. Okay? Yes?
They have a new movement where you actually modify your writing desk to be
absolutely
a walking desk, and I think that's something that people should start
yes.
engaging, especially if you spend too much time sitting.
Yep.
I have been doing that now for 6 months, and it works great. Just don't go beyond the maybe 3 miles per hour walking. Especially if you're using your mouse.
Also, they have standing desks now. That's a good change of location. You can get apps for your phone, for your computer, to remind you. Look under ergonomic. Look under arm exercises, neck. Look under reminders. That will pop up and remind you, do your arm exercises, do your neck exercises, take a break, and it'll actually show you a variety of exercises every time it pops up. And you tell it how often to remind you, okay? I really recommend that you work your neck, your arms, get up. I have bribed myself through many books, you know? You're not going to get another cup of water until you finish this paragraph, right? You're not going to get that cup of coffee until you finish this chapter, you know? Just bribe myself right through the book. Students are very surprised at that fact, that we as authors go through that, just like they do, okay? But getting up, the fresh air, walking the dogs, stepping outside and going around the block, what a new perspective you have on your writing or on the design that you're doing or on the process that you're developing. You just have a whole new look at it. And yet if you sit there for 3, 4, 5 hours at a time, which I used to do, you go slower, slower, and slower. If you take the break, spend the 5 or 10 minutes and take the break, you're more productive. It seems counterintuitive, but it's the way we're built as human beings and mortals. You know, there's that piece called We're Mortals. Okay? Staying in control so that we stay away from the chaos. Okay? We don't want to be in chaos. That's what this is about. Distraction control. That's what I was talking about shutting down the email. I'm seeing a lot of nods. Quite a few people do this, shut down email and turn off messages. Yes, it's okay. It's okay to do that. You have permission to be focused on your work, okay? Social media, text, emails, voicemails, okay? Turn off all of them, even the little beep, beep, bling, bling, whatever it is that goes in the background and notifies you. And the ergonomics, that's the piece about the best position for your neck, back, feet, and arms. There's also technology assistance to help you with this. I use a trackball like this because I've had a lot of trouble with my arms. It's not quite carpal tunnel. It comes from my neck. But the trackball uses a different movement rather than the mouse. You can also get a pad to go right under here. It can make a big, big difference. If you're really having trouble with your arms or if you're doing a tremendous amount of writing, look into voice recognition software. You know, remember the days when Dragon software was $500? You know, now you can get a copy for $50, $80. Very inexpensive. And it even comes loaded on iPads. Vary up your work from iPad to your desktop computer or your laptop. Hand recognition software, wireless keyboard so that you can put your keyboard in a different place. You're not always arched up. You should not be arched. Look at the pictures and the diagrams. Go through some of the tutorials. YouTube, all sorts of places have them. How your workstation should be set up. What a difference it will make in the long run for you. You're going to feel better. You're not going to have problems. Very, very important. And the tech assistance is really great with these. Oh, in bold, see the capital letters? Your eyes. You have to refocus your eyes. Are any of you in trifocals yet? Trifocals? Yeah, yeah. One is for reading, one is for the computer, and one is for distance. So they're putting us in trifocals, those that are on computers too much. Yeah. See, you haven't been there too much yet. We're the diehards, I guess, or bad eyes, one or the other. But you need to pick something else in the room to look at periodically, change your focus. Okay. Getting up, walking outside does that. Okay. Going to get something in the kitchen does that. Okay. Water, coffee, tea, whatever. Okay. Again, controlling the chaos. If you look at your schedule, How are you blocking out your time? Are you in control of your calendar? Okay. I think an electronic calendar, most of us are using electronic calendars. Some people still like paper because they like to have that hard copy. Some of us use electronic and then print out a paper copy to be able to have the hard copy to write on, you know. There's all sorts of different ways you can do that. But try to look at 4 blocks a day. You have your morning, your early afternoon, your mid-afternoon, and your late afternoon, and then your evening. Morning, early, late afternoon, and evening. What's locked into your schedule? Your teaching schedule, meetings, appointments, okay, office hours maybe. Now, where can you put in standing blocks and reservations for your research and your writing? Then each week you only have a certain amount that you're adjusting beyond that. You don't make doctor appointments during your standing writing times, right? Those are sacred. Those are reserved. It's a change in mindset to do this. But it's very powerful, and you're going to get a lot more done. So this is a punch list that shows plotting your projects based on timeline and duration. It's a little bit different. I was taking one project before and breaking it down into several different steps or phases. Now I'm taking projects and I'm looking at breaking them down, or whole projects and prioritizing them. So you can prioritize and you can say, what are the immediate ones? What can I put further out, and what ones can be most distantly done? Okay? And so maybe you're drafting a book proposal and it's going to go over a certain period of time. And then you're going to, after it's drafted, you're going to start the chapters. Okay? And this one, the months are down the side. That's a different way to go about thinking about it. Obviously, when you track progress, I'm doing it for myself. I'm not doing it for other people. But if I chart it, then I can see the progress. It really helps to not lose things between the cracks. This is a different one. This one I use for tracking my publications. I can't tell you. If you walk around at any other type of conference, I don't think it will be the case so much here because we're focused on writing at this conference. But if you go to one of your discipline conferences and you ask your colleagues, how many articles do you have out for review right now? Many people will say, I don't know. That's what they'll tell you, I don't know. Where did you submit your last article? I don't know. Exactly. They're submitting them, and they're counting on their email that they can just search their email. They're not keeping track of them. Okay? Now, editors are busy. I used to run a journal. I'm editor for a publisher. Very busy. Sometimes, when the reviews don't come back, we don't send out the response to you. And so you have to email the editor and say, hi, you said it'd be 3 months. It's now been 4 months. Is there any progress on the article? If you don't know where you submitted or when you submitted, how are you going to do that? Things are just going to disappear. And all that hard work you went into writing, research and writing, is gone. Okay? So this one shows the entire writing process. It has some of the, at the top, some of the research process, but then it has a very detailed writing process in it and submission process. And the X's, the number of X's doesn't matter strictly. It's just showing, like, in June, it's the first half of June, and in July, it's the middle of July, and this is the end of August. But it's not weeks or anything. It's not that specific. You can do it that way if you want. But here's the research process, and then down here shows cover letter submitted. Journal 1 I identified. This is International Journal of Online Learning, I think, of in, internet learning. And then another strategy I'm going to tell you is for every article that I'm writing, I identify a few journals so that I know the audience I'm writing for when I write the article initially. Because articles, good articles, will get rejected. And you have to decide if you're going to make all the changes they want or you're just going to submit it to the next journal. Okay? So I have that already identified. I've plotted what's my schedule for my research, and I have a goal of when I'm submitting that. See that? September 1. I had that already out there. Then I would be able to mark down when I submitted it to Journal 1. I already identified which one it was, and I'd write down when I submitted it. Once I submit it, I might drop in a couple of more lines and put in heard from the editor and put in their email address, you know, received responses, et cetera. It's my tracking. This is exactly what I do on my side as the editor of the journal. I have a tracking sheet like this where I'm keeping track of everything that's coming in. Received the article, sent out to reviewers, received back from reviewer 1, 2, 3, what date I'm going to send them a reminder, et cetera, et cetera. So this is my tracking as the author. So now I can, in my calendar, e-calendar, September 1, say, Kath, have you sent out that article? And it'll pop up. And then if the editor tells me 3 months I should have a response, I'll go 4 months, and I'll say to myself in my calendar, have you heard from Journal 1? Okay? As a tickler to myself. Okay? So when I send you this PowerPoint, you can see this up close, right? The tracking chart gives you the details. You can see where your research and your publications are in the development and the publication process. You know, so when it comes for annual review, or if you're talking to the dean or a department chair, et cetera, you can look at it the night before and say, oh, I have 3 articles that I'm doing the research for. 2 are in press, 1 is under review, and 1 is ready to go out in 2 weeks, right? And you have that all right in the chart, okay? You can also see what is left to complete for each project, especially if you have collaborators, right? This is very helpful, okay? So it gives you a variety of ways to slice and dice your data about what you're doing, and it's all in one place. This is a little different way of organizing it. This is research and submission tracking in a different view that I've developed. Is this helpful? Yeah? Okay. Yeah, this one, I made some copies this morning of this one. Hopefully some of these will get around. Spread a few to each area. These didn't come out. So this one is research and submission tracking, and on this one, is that bigger? Is that any bigger? Yeah. There we go. Okay. Move it over. There we go. How's that? Okay. Yeah. So you can see this is a different way of doing it, okay? So in this one, if you wanted to use this one, this is a different way I came up with it. You could, all in one Excel spreadsheet, I've got by category, and then your projects would move from category to category. In the first group, the orange group, are the ones that, these are under research, and it has all the different stages going across in the row. And so the project one, project two, and you can see number three hidden under there, they would be listed, and I would put in the dates, my estimated dates, and then the dates when things actually happened. See, proofed by KPK and team, and then proofed by DS. DS was my collaborator on this these projects. And then down here, in the green one, writing is in process. And it's the same, for simplicity, I kept the same column titles, but I'm working down in this area now, okay? And then down in here is submitted to journal and waiting. So I've moved them into this chart as a way that I can keep track of them, I can chart them, I can plan, but I've got them in categories so that I can quickly count and be able to tell a supervisor or write in a report, et cetera, how many in each category. Okay? That's what I'm doing with that one.
Excuse me, I have a question.
Yeah.
In your writing block time in the morning,
yeah.
When do you do this kind of planning? How do you?
This is basically just tracking. So this probably only takes me, once I have set it up, it only takes me about 10 minutes to update these when I do that. And so I can do that as part of my morning.
Right.
Yeah. I don't invest a great deal of time in doing this. It's just a small thing that I keep up with, okay? So it doesn't become a project in itself. Thank you for bringing that up. That's a good point, right? And you see in this big version of it, down at the bottom, it says something, accepted in press, and then in parentheses it says move to CV. Okay? So you don't lose it. Yeah, okay. What's that? Yep. No, if you give me a business card, I'll send them all to you by email. Yep. Now, let's talk about some effective ways to use some technology, okay, to do article management and writing management. One is virtual filing cabinet, Dropbox, Google Docs, whatever you've got, whatever you have available. You want to use that and set up your virtual document space, okay? If you're not already doing it, the whole point is that it synchronizes to your computer and the virtual folder at the same time, and it's accessible from any web-enabled device, as the diagram shows. From my cell phone, I can see my documents from my computer at the office, from my computer at home, and on my iPad. I can have Dropbox on every single one, Google Docs on every single one. Thank you. Wow, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, huh? Oh, my goodness. Yes.
I'm a member of the infamous IRB at my university.
Yeah.
And I would caution people to be careful storing any human subjects-related data on Google Drives, iClouds, or anything like that. And when in doubt, ask your university if they think it's safe or not. In principle, it's not.
Yeah.
So if it's confidential, sensitive matters, try not to use these forms for the data, not for your writing, but for the actual data.
And okay. Your university should have its own virtual cloud at this point. Most universities do, and those are usually secure portals.
We have some systems, but they're dependent on a software survey management tool.
Oh.
Qualtrics is what it's called. That
yep.
one is very secured,
yes.
But we don't have much more other than that I know about. But
yes, SurveyMonkey usually is not, but Qualtrics
right.
is.
Qualtrics
yes.
is, yes.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. But I know we had, at my last couple of universities, we had virtual drives also that were available through the university, and you could do the same thing as this. Okay, and they were HTTPS, so they're secure drives. But I set up my Google Gmail, so it's a secure space also. In your virtual drive, you want virtual folders, you know, like your filing cabinet, obviously. And standard ones for folks like us would be research writing, and then a CV one that would have your CV, your bio, your headshots, all that. A subfolder for each of your writing projects. And I keep in there drafts of outlines, the related articles, the literature search, so I make a subfolder for all related articles. Data analysis is a separate area. Journal correspondence, and then a start file. The start file has my initial draft title and topic and bullet points for an abstract and a couple of potential journals. That's my very beginning point in my writing process on these. And as I'm exploring those journals, a professor told me this 20 years ago when I started in academia. I was struggling trying to get my articles published, and she said, are you looking at the journals themselves? And I'm like, what? And she said, go down to the stacks. That's how long ago, folks, right? Go down to the stacks and sit down and pull out a couple of editions of the journal and browse. Read the articles. Get a taste of and a flavor of the conversation, the language, the formality. What are they interested in? I'm like, yes, of course, right? Who's my audience? Who am I speaking to? Who's the community, right? And so that's what I'm doing here. I'm doing research before I even start writing the articles so that I understand the audience I'm writing to. And I do that for a couple of journals so that I can try to hit squarely that it'll fit a couple of journals in case it doesn't fit one of them, okay? And so I'm even, see that bottom one? Keep the preliminary, most recent related articles. So if there's some related articles in their journal, keep those. And that's very good to include, of course. If you can include in your reference list some legitimately related articles from their journal, then that shows that you're continuing the conversation. To keep most of this stuff, I use a PDF program. And I print to PDF, and it saves it in a PDF file, and I save it right in that folder. It's much cleaner than saving it as HTML, right? Yeah. And Adobe PDF, if you have that. And another one, PDF Lite, is free. If you copy and paste it into Word, then now most of the time you can make a PDF out of that, and Google Docs will let you make a PDF as well. But saving your online material as PDF or downloading as PDF is really, really helpful. Okay. Your author folder, I think our book authors must have these, but people that are even doing articles, you should be doing this. You have your contact information and a bio. I keep one document, and it's my bio document. And I have 75 words, 50 words, 100, 150, 200, 250, right? Everybody do this? And then I also have conference, articles, books, because they're written differently, right, for the bios. And it's a master document, right? And so somebody asks me for a bio. I don't write my bio. I open up the document and go, which one? Oh, yeah, article, 50 words, that one, okay? Thank you. So you do it once. I hate retyping things. Ugh, right? Recreating. Ugh, no, never. Okay. Professional headshots. We had a gal, Ladybug Photographies, doing them for free here at the conference. Get your headshot now.
Tomorrow.
No. Your picture, right? And She'll email the pictures to you and then save them in a variety of graphic formats, PNG, JPEG, etc., and resolutions, okay? And you'll have those available. And your cover letter for your submissions. You don't keep writing those cover letters for all those journals over and over, right? You don't keep doing that. No. All right. So reflecting on our writing process and also our research, what we've been involved in, our research interests, our writing interests, What contributions have you been making? What areas do you want to continue? Where do you want to head? Do you have one strand you're following? Are really there a couple and you haven't really realized that? How do they work together? How can you bring them and integrate them to be more powerful, leverage them? And are you ready to shift your course somewhat? What direction would be beneficial for you? Tech tips, we have to acknowledge that as academic writers, our writing is different than other areas. I've been part of ASJA. I've been part of a couple of other groups. Our writing is different. And so we have unique needs. Our references, citations, it's just a whole different world in breadth and depth. We have a specific audience. Our projects tend to be very big. Reference control, there's a variety of ways that you can go about this using bibliographic online management tools or even just a master Word or Excel file that you keep the ones that you use most frequently, okay, so that you can copy and paste them. Watch out for those automated citation and reference programs that insert them, because if you send your articles or your book manuscripts to your editors that way, they're going to freak out, right? You want to pull all that coding out after you've inserted them. Yes. Okay. And writing accelerators. I'm sure you have your tricks. As I'm writing, I'm doing everything to keep my flow going. So when I'm writing and I can't think of the citation, I put in cite here, okay? And when I have to stop because it's dinner time or this or that or the other, I say, just a minute, give me two more minutes. I yell across the house. And I put in a couple of more bullet points of where I'm headed. Right? And I also put about three asterisks. That's my marker, asterisks, because I don't use them for anything else in my writing. Right? And so I can always go Control F, asterisk, and I go right to where I left off writing. That's my little trick. So create a trick to get to right where you left off, right? And then capture your train of thought. Capture where you were headed. Just use bullets so that you know where you were headed for the next time. If you know you want to change something, it's just not reading right, it's not coming out right, highlight it in a color, a bright color, and just keep going, right? You know that when you do a print preview, it's going to be glaring at you, yeah. Right? You have a trick?
No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. These are all little ones. And then programs and apps that are helpful. One of the ones that I found, and I found it through my realtor, because we had to scan so many documents. The one that I'm using right now is Smart Document Scanner. There's a bunch of free scanning programs for your cell phone. And you can just go around scanning things, scans it into cell phone, and then you can email it or store it, et cetera, et cetera. But it makes it easy if you're looking at an article or document or whatever, just scan it in and it's a PDF for you, okay, full-size PDF. A PDF signing program like DocuSign that you can actually on your phone or tablet do your signature, all those publisher authorization forms, right? Just sign it and send it right back, right? Browser add-ins for references, for pages, for reading lists, for saving pages, for printing, macros. I've come up with a system, and this is really important. This is one of the important things. You've got to figure out what works for you, okay? You've got to adapt, mash, and master these different strategies. And look at some of the cell phone apps. I constantly browse. Because I'm a techie, I browse cell phone apps. That's fun to me. Right? That's like going to Macy's for other women. Okay? I browse cell phone apps and iPad apps. And I found a neat little note taker that in this note taker, it's memo, I can write things, voice dictate, and also embed photographs. And so I've got all these notes that everything from what I had to pack for the trip to how to control all the pool valves and pictures of them at my new house, okay? And so being able to integrate all that into one document and have them searchable, et cetera, right on my phone is very, very helpful. So if I'm gathering information, ideas for a book, ideas for an article, et cetera, you can capture all of those things. It's just called Memo, this one. Yeah, okay? But look for an integrated note taker, okay? And you want to find which phone to-do app works for you, all right? A to-do app. Wunderlist is a really good one. W-U-N-D-R is a very powerful one. There's tons of them with all different features. I'd advise finding one that will sync between your computer, your iPad, your phone, etc., your brain, whatever you can get it to sync with, right? And so that you can always have that to-do list. And then you've got something that's available to you, right? But keep looking at the different apps and what the possibilities are that you can use them to help you have right available to you all the time information that you can get it out of your brain. You can capture it. You don't lose it.
Do you like Evernote?
Yes, Evernote is another very good one. Yes, Evernote is good. I find it clunky. Yeah, yeah. Maybe I just haven't mastered it.
Are the ones you've been using free?
Huh? Yes.
I paid $44 yeah. a year for Evernote.
That might be it. Yeah, this gal is saying that she's paid the $44 for Evernote, and it's a lot better than the free one? Is that what you're thinking?
Than the premium.
Yeah, okay. So paying the $44 for Evernote might be the way to go. Evernote integrates across several different applications and platforms. It should be a very powerful one. A lot of people like that. Especially for the iPad, I know.
Are the apps you've been using free?
Yes, most all the apps I use are free.
Okay.
Yeah, because I used to do a whole podcast system, whole podcast series of podcasts for teachers based on technology. So there's one of my books, Podcasting for Teachers, and the whole focus was on free technology. My big thing with technology, even though I'm a techie, is that I know not everybody is. So I try to look for simple things. And I know not everybody has a university budget. So they might not be able to get finances for things. So I try to keep at the free level and find things that are available, easy and free. And that's what I try to recommend to people. Yeah. So it's carried over from doing the podcast for 5 years. So there's a couple other books here that might be interesting to some of you. 147 Tips for Emerging Scholars has some of what I've been talking about and much, much more. That's Atwood Press. Professor's Guide to Taming Technology is Information Age. That's a very interesting one. That a lot of people like that. And the Evolving Research, the black one with the prism on it, that's my major area of research within adult learning that I'm known for. So that's just a couple of them. What's that? Yeah. Well, that's the whole science thing. You've got the white coming in, and then it breaks apart into the colors. And that's my whole philosophy. I'll just end by saying that we all need each other, and we need the perspectives that everybody offers. Nobody has one perfect perspective on this. It's that, you know, this is my take on how to do this. Everybody has their own unique pathway and unique perspective, and it's by all of us sharing together that we get the full spectrum of the light. Thank you very much.